Yeah, we were talking about the Volozhin. I just want to mention one final little vignette. When Volozhin was closed in 1892, it was in the month of Av, which was the summer, and the Netziv remained around in Volozhin till the middle of next year when he went to Varsha because he was ill, and that's where he died shortly thereafter. He actually wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. He was hoping to go from Varsha to Eretz Yisrael, and when people started bringing up the idea that the start of Volozhin in Eretz Yisrael, that he says he didn't even think of. He just wanted to just retire, essentially, be a balabas and spend the rest of his life in his Torah and Aveda. But for the half a year that he stayed in Volozhin, so then it began to snow. After Sukkot, began to snow, the winters. And the Russians locked up, when they closed the building officially, they locked it up and they sealed it with a wax seal to be sure that nobody could tamper with the wax, etc. And they noticed that on the side of the Beis Medrash, every night, there were just like tracks, human tracks, that went up to the window. And the new snow fell, and every morning, when they went in the morning, they just walked by, and they didn't realize that somebody wanted to just see what was going on. And the Netziv, who was already very old and very sick, every night, after Chatzais, he would go there, like Tikkun Chatzais, he would be Misabel over the closing of the yeshiva by himself in the cold. And no one knew that other than the fact that the tracks gave it away. But as I say, the point is there were, I mean, in retrospect at least, as you often see in Hashgacha, there was a Hashgacha Pratis in the closing of Volozhin. Number one, as the Netziv himself touched up, it prevented the adulteration of Torah with all of the secularism. Number two, it created a greater spreading out of Torah in many other mostos. Now again, there were yeshivas that started before Volozhin was closed down. Mir started very early, although it started after Volozhin, but the godless, these yeshivas became great, whether it's Slobodka, Mir, Panovich, Tels, Kamenetz, Baranovich. All of these yeshivas were either started after Volozhin closed, or they are like Mir, they got their godless after Volozhin closed. And the truth of the matter also is that Mikan Olahaba, to understand the yeshivas in Europe, you have to understand Musar. Volozhin was a non-Musar yeshiva. Not all of the other great yeshivas were Musar yeshivas. So Mimela, to understand what's going on in the yeshiva world, we now have to talk about what's called the Tnuas HaMusar, the Musar movements. And the Musar movements is, of course, credited to a single yochid, that is Rav Yisrael Salanter. And let's talk about him a little bit and the different shitas. First of all, the concept of Musar. Musar, of course, is not a word that's made up by anybody. Musar is in Tanakh. Shema b'ni Musar Avicha. Musar is chastisement. Musar is guidance. It's difficult to give a precise definition. It's connected to Yaser, which is Yisurin, to be afflicted, to be disciplined, in order to go in the right way. Now, obviously, Musar was not invented by Yisrael Salanter. First of all, the Iker literature of Musar, the Iker Sifrei Musar, dates, besides Chazal, besides the words of Nevi'im, we certainly have many Svarim from Rishayim, Aninyonim of Midas and Musar and Yiras Hashem. We have Sharon Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yaina, who was the nephew of the Ramban. By the way, as a little aside, the Chidah brings, why did Rabbeinu Yaina, one of the great Rishayim, it's called Rabbeinu Yaina, because he really was so chashev, why did Rabbeinu Yaina write a book on Tshuva? So the Chidah records a maisa that in Rabbeinu Yaina's youth, he was a book burner of the Rambam. Remember, the Rambam's Mari Nevuchim was actually condemned by some kehilas because of its utilization of Aristotelian philosophy, and there were kehilas that actually burnt the Mori Nevuchim Barabbim. And Rabbeinu Yaina was a participant. Now, around 50 years after the burning of the Rambam Sfarim by Yidden, the Catholic Church in Paris burnt 50 wagon loads of Shasin. This is before printing, so these were all manuscript. And this Kemat was all of the Gemaras in France. And it wasn't that easy to get a Shasin those days. And the Gedalim at the time saw this as an onesh min hashamayim, mida keneged mida. You burn the works of the Rambam, then the own Torah will be burnt, so to speak. But the Chidar records that Rabbeinu Yaina had so much charata for what he did in burning the Rambam Sfarim that he decided to dedicate his life to becoming a Baal Tshuva and to bring others to Tshuva, and hence he wrote Shari Tshuva. So we have Shari Tshuva as one example, Chayvas Halavavas, which is even before the Rambam, right? There's a great Sifrei Musar. Mesilas Yesharim is from the Achrayim, from the Ramchal, but that's certainly before Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. The Ramchal lived before the Gra, and the Ramchal, although their lives overlapped, but the Ramchal was Nifter as a very young man, right? He's buried in Tiberia, next to Rabbi Akiva. He was Nifter before the Gra became of age, and the Gra is said to have said that if the Ramchal would have been alive, he would have walked, the Gra would have walked barefoot to Amsterdam and to Italy to learn Torah from the Ramchal. So Mesilas Yesharim has nothing to do with Yisrael Salanter. It's way before Yisrael Salanter. So the concept of Musar, the concept of Yiras Hashem, the concept of Midos Tovos, what? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter did not invent any of these things. So what went on? So what do we mean about non-Musar yeshivas, Musar movements? What exactly did Rabbi Yisrael Salanter invent? Once again, a lot of this is Makusha with the Haskalah. Haskalah is kind of the black shadow that causes everything, both good and bad, to be happening here. Rav Yisrael Salanter was Margish in, well again, when did he live? He was born in towards the beginning of the 1800s, and he was Nifter again in the 1890s, around the time Volozhin closed. I don't remember the exact year, but his life kind of spans the yeshiva of Volozhin, interestingly enough. Both the opening and the closing. He was born, he was a tremendous Eloi, as a young man, he was a big bucky in Shas. By the way, we have no picture of Yisrael Salanter. If you want to know what Yisrael Salanter looked like, it's quite amazing. We have drawings of the Rambam and Rashi. Obviously there were no photographs. We do not have a single photograph or painting of Yisrael Salanter. It's quite amazing how he managed to avoid any type of capture. But he was known as a phenomenal Eloi, and in his youth he became Rosh Hashivas in different places. But eventually he saw in the door a certain Rifyan, even among Talmidei Chachamim, and maybe especially among Talmidei Chachamim, he sensed there was a certain gaiva in the world, there was a certain arrogance, a certain lack of derech eretz. Again, the same type of thing that Chassidus identified, in which people who were not learned were looked down upon, etc. So he saw it also in the Litvische Welt. And he saw that people were not Zohir as much in Bein Adam L'Chavero as they were in Bein Adam L'Makom. He also saw, he was kind of a philosopher of the unconscious, that even when people do mitzvahs, their motivations are not often to serve Hashem, but they might be to get recognition, to get kavod. And he wanted to develop a shita where people would consciously work on, number one, their Bein Adam L'Chaveray, and number two, on the inner panemius motivations of why they do mitzvahs. To work on Avas Hashem, to work on Yiras Hashem. Actually, Yisrael Salanter, the truth of the matter is, emphasized Yiras Hashem more than Avas Hashem. He held very much of Yiras Ha'inish. He felt that the door was weak. Kind of today we say, because the door is weak, we don't talk about Yiras Ha'inish. He felt fakir. Because the door was weak, they needed to know, you don't behave, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you klep. So Yiras Ha'inish was actually a big musik. Now, initially Rav Yisrael had many, many mavuchas. He didn't really know where to go. On one hand, he was tremendously matzliach in the standard yeshivish culture. He did not learn in Volozhin, strangely enough. He learned in like small But they medrash, he too was not a yeshiva-educated person, like the Chazon Ish later. But he was very matzliach. Again, as I say, he was a tremendous genius. In fact, there's so many famous stories about one time he was giving a shir, and he put up Maru Makaimus, and he had enemies that wanted to discredit him. So they switched the Maru Makaimus, and they put a bunch of Maru Makaimus that had no shaychus to anything. And Rav Yisrael Salanter looked at the sheet that was up there, and it says he turned white for around 15 seconds. And then he gave an Eluya Shashir based on the Maror Mekaymus that he had just seen. And his Talmud said, don't think he needed 15 seconds. Rather, the 15 seconds was a cheshbon ha-nefesh, would I be a Baal Gaiva to do it this way? In other words, it was a Musar Dikka cheshbon ha-nefesh of 15 seconds. It was not a learning cheshbon ha-nefesh. So he was very, very brilliant, very, very successful. But he himself looked at his own life and he felt that the motives may not be totally, again, very hard standard. The motives were not totally l'shem shemayim. So at one point he thought he would become a hermit. He would be misbited. This was actually a minhag among some people in Lita. There was a concept of kind of, you know, going into the forest, living by yourself, not talking, tainis dibor, eating very little, etc. There were such prushim. In fact, the word prushim, which we even use for the, in fact, the old Talmid HaGra, Kehila of Yerushalayim, is technically called the prushim. But what does prushim mean? Those who are, of course, it's a word in Chazal, but it means those who separate from the world. There was kind of a certain hanhug of hermetism, if there is such a word. And Rav Yisrael Salanter wanted to be that mahalach. But then he came to the maskana that when you have a door that needs chizuk and a door that needs hadracha, you can't just separate yourself and work on yourself. But you're mechuyev to try to be mashpia on the door. So he actually decided that wasn't the proper derech for this door. It's similar to something the Chassam Sofer said much earlier. The Chassam Sofer tainted, why of all of the avais, Avraham Avinu was called Avraham Ohavi. That means Avraham who loved God. Why did he love God? Because he says, Avram could have been on a higher madrega had Avram separated himself from the world. He didn't have to be involved in Stoim and Rishayim in Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But because he loved Hashem, he was willing to be mavater on the own madregas he could have achieved to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. And the Chassam Sofer says, that is what is called Mesiras Nefesh. When I give up my life for Hashem, I'm not giving up my nefesh, I'm giving up my guf. But when I give up my ruchnius for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's called Mesiras Nefesh Mamish. You see, the Panovitcher Rav said that about himself as well. The Panovitcher Rav said that the greatest korban he made for Klal Yisrael were all of the Sfarim that he could have written had he not been building Taira in such a phenomenal way. In fact, they tell a cute story that the Chavis Chaim was once talking about the chiyuv of being mezakeh as harabim. So the Chavis Chaim said, you know, it's not a big kunst to be a Talmud Chacham if you're sitting and learning all day and that's all you do. The Chavis Chaim said, even I could have been a Talmud Chacham, he says, if I would just sit and learn. But no, I felt I had to be mevater a little bit for the kehillah. So the Chavis Chaim said, even I could have been a Talmud Chacham. It's not such a big deal. But be it as it may, so Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was first debating whether he should be a Porush. He then decided not to be a Porush. But the story goes, and Rabbi Yisrael himself said this, the thing that started him on this path of looking for a unique way of serving Hashem was that when he was young, around 12 or 13, maybe right before his bar mitzvah, right after his bar mitzvah, there was a tzaddik in his town of Salant. His last name was Lipkin, so he's called Salanter because he's from the town of Salant, which is a little shtetl near Vilna. And there was a tzaddik in the town that nobody paid much attention to. His name was Rav Zundel of Salant. Rav Zundel of Salant happened to have been a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, maybe one of the first Talmidim of Volozhin. And Rav Zundel was a working man. Rav Zundel was a woodcutter or a water carrier, one of those things. Rav Zundel did not have a rabbinic position. But Rav Yisrael Salanter, as a child, had a certain chush that there was something unique about Rav Zundel. And he would follow him around. He would spy on him. He would say, what is it you notice? Rav Zundel, like, never learned in front of other people. Like, you know, you wouldn't know, you know, he was a Talmud Chacham. But Rav Yisrael Salanter noticed the way he davened, the way he learned when nobody was looking. He really made it a project to spy on him, watch him for a few weeks. And finally, when Rav Zundel caught on, so Rav Zundel gave him a few words that changed his life. He said, Yisrael, He says, if you want to be a Yerei Shemayim, learn Musar. And that kind of struck very, very deep roots. So, Rabbi Soslander developed this thing called Musar movements. Now, what exactly is the Musar movement? So people make a big mistake. You know, people say, well, we're all Musar yeshivas, we have Musar Seder. Does Ursa Meir have a Musar Seder? That doesn't even officially, you don't have, okay, but like, yeshivas have an official Musar Seder. An official Musar Seder is, you know, you learn 15 minutes of Musar. Now, the truth of the matter is, and then I'm going to tell you about the big fights against Musar that exist. Now, what's the big fight if somebody learns Musar in 15 minutes? That wasn't the big fight. Rather, Rav Yisrael Salanter wants you to introduce, not only in yeshivas, but among balabatim, and among women and children, kind of a structured working on your character. One has to understand, learning Sifrei Musar was only a small chelek of what this Musar movement was about. A lot of it would be vadim, and the vadim would discuss personal issues, and it would actually be what you might call from group therapy, in which people come together, they talk about their nisyonos, they talk about their chesronos, they talk about the mistakes that they made, and they talk about etzas, to be mechazik themselves. Now, the truth of the matter is, in Eretz Yisrael today, women have these groups. There are more women have these groups than men, but the goal was that people would actually be mechazik each other in working on specific problems. So you might say to your chavrusa, or even in a big chavura, you might say, today I was upset, I was angry at somebody because I thought that he didn't have proper kavod for my svara. And then we say, okay, what makes you angry? Why do you get angry? Why do you feel you need that kavod? And they would literally, psychologically, so people make a big mistake when they think that Musar was simply learning certain svarim. The ikkar was to apply this Musar l'maisa. And sometimes this would mean a significant part of the day. There might be 2 or 3 hours a day of doing this. It wasn't 15 minutes a day. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter also talked about the merchak between the mind and the heart. And he said there were 2 different ways you had to learn Musar. You had to learn Musar bi'in, in which you cler chakiris, and you try, like you're learning a sugya, to understand the shirashim of personality, of kochos hanefesh, of what makes you tick. So Musar is not only about learning about Chazal, but it's also learning about yourself. And then you apply the lessons from Chazal and from Tanakh. But then there was something called Musar Bihispailas, which is designed to give you an emotional rise, in which you might take one Maimer Chazal, and you might repeat it 100 times, like a mantra. And that would be Ma'irer the Lev in Bechi and the like. And Rav Yisrael Salanter said there had to be 2 different types of Musar, Hispailas and Musar Be'ian. And the Musar Be'ian was both to get the taich and the insight of Chazal, and also to understand yourself. In fact, now you see the that set of Svarim, Bilvavi Mishko Nevnech, Rabbi Summer Schwartz, now he's identified, he was anonymous for many years. That's Taka, the type of Mahalach that is going back to Rabbi Yisrael's original Musar. What does he call the Sefer? Da es Atzmacha is one of his, right? The notion of knowing yourself, knowing yourself. Not just going through the motions. This was really deep Torah psychology of understanding the unconscious motivations that make a person do something.
Where are these 2 ways of Rasulat brought down?
Huh? Where are they brought down? Musar Be'ian and Musar Bihispailas?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of places, really. Basically, if you look in the Ali Shur, Ali Shur talks about it. And if you look, the Sefer, if you want to know the definitive, there is a 5-volume work on the Gedalei HaMusar called Tenuas HaMusar, and the Mechaber is Rav Dov Katz, and I'm sure the library has it. It's probably out of print now, but it's really the Yesodis, the whole Chelek Aleph is just Rav Yisrael Salanter. Then other Chalakim have a lot of other people, but the whole, like, 600 pages is on Rav Yisrael Salanter and the like. Now, how did Rav Yisrael do this? So, number one, he was a Rosh Yeshiva first in Vilna. He left Vilna. It's not really clear why he left Vilna. There are different stories. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a bireach mina machlekes. And when it looked like he was going to take somebody else's shteller, because they wanted him more than the other person, he just quit. And this was kedarkai over and over and over and over again. He would not, under any circumstances, take any type of kibbutz or any type of position if it would hurt somebody else. There's another story, which, and probably both are true, that he left Vilna because the maskilim were trying to open up what's called a modern rabbinic seminary, which would teach public speaking and the like. And since Rav Yisrael was such an elegant person, a polite person, a man of the world, a Derech Eretz person, the maskilim actually thought he would be a great guy to have. And he left because he didn't want that pressure or whatever it would be. In other words, on one level, Haskalah and Musar actually had one commonality, because one of the tainus of Haskalah was that yeshivish culture, and certainly non-yeshivish culture, chassidish culture, were rude, uncouth, they were not polite, they were not people that, you know, had manners. So they liked the fact that Musar people dressed nicely and spoke softly and spoke with dignity. So they thought Rav Yisrael was one of them. And of course he wasn't, and he kind of left Vilna. So from Vilna he went to Kovna, and he started what are called Beis Musars, Batei Musar. We have in Yerushalayim a Beis Musar. What's a Beis Musar? A Beis Musar is a Beis Medrash, but it doesn't have Gemaras in it, strangely enough. It only has Sifrei Musar. And the goal would be, you'd come in, whether it's 15 minutes a day, an hour a day, 2 hours a day, at whatever level, and be misbaining in Musar and the like. And Rav Yisrael's goal was that this would be something not just for B'nai Torah. He thought this would be something for all Balabatim. It would teach them to be honest in business. It would teach them Shalom Bayis. It would teach them how to raise their children. Because he did not consider this B'davka limited to B'nai Torah, but he also felt that the yeshivas themselves had to have it as well. Now, the emes is the following. The emes is, some have tied it that, why was Volozhin against Musar? And we'll see, there was a lot of hisnagdus to Rav Yisrael Salanter. So the taina was, Rav Chaim Efrat was against Musar, because Rav Chaim taina, again, when I say against Musar, I don't mean against learning some Musar, but against this whole program, creating these therapy things, creating these vadim, creating special base Musars. In fact, there was a joke in Lita that went the following. You don't have to have a special house for Yiras Hashem. It says in Hallel, Beis Arayin Baruchu Es Hashem. The house of Arayin blesses Hashem. Beis HaLevi Baruchu Es Hashem. The house of Levi blesses Hashem. And then it says, Yirei Hashem Baruchu Es Hashem. It doesn't say Beis Yirei Hashem. This was the Shtach in Lita. You don't have to have a house for Yirei Hashemayim. What's a Beis Musar? Yirei Hashem. But the Ikra Taina was that Rav Chaim formulated is that Torah itself refines a person. Torah itself gives a person ruchnius and spirituality. There is no reason to bring something else in. Rabbi Saul Salanter was even accused of borrowing from psychology, because indeed he talks about the unconscious and the connection between Rabbi Saul Salanter and Freud. He was before Freud, but other psychologists who were before Freud, etc. So there was a whole kind of that Rabbi Saul Salanter himself was Ka'ein Amaskil, because he's bringing in all of this other stuff. So Rav Chaim Shita, and this was the Volozhiner Shita, was that Tikkun HaMidais comes from Hasmada B'Torah, and one does not need anything else, and one should not bring in anything else. The Chafetz Chaim later said, that he felt Rav Chaim was not correct in our door.
Which Rav Chaim?
Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Yeah, not Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Because he said that Torah is the mazayin of a healthy neshama. When your neshama is healthy, Torah taka gives you all the nutrition you need. But kishem, that when a person is sick, they need to take medicines and drugs, and the normal diet will not be maspik. The Chafetz Chaim was magder. Again, this is after, but this is in retrospect. defining Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's idea. The Torah is, so just like a chayli needs refuah, so the Musar is the refuah. So even though Chazal say the Torah is tavlin, but he says the Torah is tavlin for the Yetzer Hara, but when you have a normal Yetzer Hara, but when you're Meshukah, Betaiva, and Gaiva, and all those other inyanim, you need special Hechitimsis. So this is Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Shita of the concept of Musar and the like. In fact, the Chafetz Chaim later said, any yeshiva that did not have a Musar program, or a Musar Chinuch, he called it a Bor B'Rishus HaRabim. You're creating a Bor because you're sending out Rabbanim, Rosh Hashivas, Gedolim, that might be Mushchas B'Midas, etc. And that's a tremendous Sakana for Klal Yisrael. So in Kovna, Kovna was the major city of which Slobodka was a suburb. He began the first base Musar. Vilna, he didn't really do it. And he gathered among himself some very, very great, great Talmidim. Talmidim who themselves became Gedalei Musar and Torah, and they were the leaders of the next generation. I just want to mention right now three Talmidim of Israel to explain their different approaches, because what's interesting is each of his Talmidim took something different from their Rebbe, and they developed a different type of Musar. Musar actually developed in many, many different directions, although it's all Meyusid on Rav Yisrael Salanter. Rav Yisrael Salanter's oldest, longest Talmud, and probably we call the Talmud Muvak, was Rav Simcha Zissel Breidi, same name as Rav Shiv of Chevron, because Rav Shiv of Chevron is his great-grandson, and he is known as the Alter, the old man of Kelim. Kelim was a Lifish Shtut, and eventually the Alter of Kelim started a yeshiva in Kelim. It was called the Talmud Torah of Kelim, and Kelim took from Rav Yisrael Salanter this yesod of extreme seder and machshava, the notion that everything a person does has to be eiskecheshbent. You don't act out of instinct. Somebody talks to you, you think before you answer. Kelim, in fact, they say that the Alter of Kelim was able at the end of a day to reconstruct every single machshava he had in the course of the day. In fact, if you know, the emes is that many of the Balei Musar are Talmidim or Talmidim of Kelim. Rav Volba was a Talmud of Rav Yeruchim. Rav Yeruchim of Mir was a Talmud of Kelim. I'll give you the Shalshalos a little later on. If you ever were Zeichet to talk to Rav Volba, hear Rav Volba talk, you may know that it was difficult to have a conversation with him because you weren't sure that he heard you. If you said something, he didn't respond. He counted to 20 and then talked, because he had this shita never to say a word until you first know ahead of time what you're going to say. The notion of Yishuv Hadas, the notion of Seder, the notion of never getting upset, taking things in stride. And this was the yeshiva that he started in Kelim. And Kelim had all sorts of exercises. Some people might look at it as crazy, but Kelim was actually a yeshiva katana at first. Kids came, you know, after bar mitzvah or even before bar mitzvah. And Kelim had all sorts of, you might call, crazy exercises to build a person's midos and self-control. Just a few examples. In Kelim, there was a mandatory night seder, like 12 o'clock at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, which was only 5 minutes, no more, no less. What's the tachlis of a 5 minute night seder? You really can't be late. It taught you the importance of time, that, you know, the seder was, you'd be woken up, you know, 15 minutes before, and for 5 minutes, the importance of time. In Kelim, if you got a food package from your parents, you had to share it with everybody. You couldn't take it for yourself. If you got a letter from your family, you could not open it for 24 hours. Because a person gets a letter, you want to rip it open. He says, no, put it aside for 24 hours. And then you open it up. After a tinus, the food that was served was always fish that was filled with bones, little bones. Why? Because after a tinus, the person tends to eat ravenously, like an animal. He says, no, you eat slowly, slowly. You're not an animal. Right? So in Kelum, there was a big, big emphasis on machshava, on serenity, on not rushing, on thinking before you talk, on not being distracted. In fact, they say that in Kelm, there were kenosis, by the way, that if somebody turned around during davening to look at something, let's say there was a noise, a chair dropped, and you turn around to look, you get a kenos. You had to pay money. What, you have to look? What's the nafgamina? You know, things like that. What did they say? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, as a bacher, learned in Kelm for 6 months. And he once said, Rav Yaakov was more of a Slobodka person. Rav Yaakov said, every person should go to Kelm for 6 months. But then he said, but no more. So the story goes, I'll give you an example. Rav Yaakov once got a kenas in Kelm. What happened was that they called up somebody to be a Kohen. I'm sorry, they were looking around for the Gabbai thought there was no Kohen there. And he was going to call the Yisrael B'mkom Kohen. But Rav Yaakov turned around and noticed that a Kohen just walked into the room. So he told the Gabbai, there's a Kohen. So the Gabbai said to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Yashkayach for telling us, but you know, since you're looking around to see who comes in and out, you know, you have to get a kenas. It reminds me, they tell a story even in Harvard University about in the 1600s, there was a major, when Harvard just started, there was a major fire. I don't know how big the library was, but it was 1,000 books, one of the biggest libraries in America at the time. And 1,000 books were destroyed. But one Talmud had one book that he took out without checking out. And this was the only book that was saved. So he brought it to the library and says, I was matzil the saver. So they gave him a big yashkayach and they expelled him. You know, it's the same type of thing. So this is mamish the same thing. So by Kelm, they say all sorts of things. If somebody left a cane or a hat in Kelm, it would be there 30 years later. In fact, the mamuna who's supposed to clean the base medrash, he would like lift up the hat, clean under the hat, put the hat down. So with Kelum, the concept, as I say, was menuchas hanefesh, thinking before you talk, seder, being machshiv zman, and discipline, inner discipline. And as I say, he took talmidim who were young, because he felt that he actually had to be mashrish these midas in young kids, even though people did stay on for many, many years. As I say, some people felt this was excessive, some people felt like it was too much, but this was the Alter Shita, very, very starka Shita in disciplined Hadracha. And the truth of the matter is, we have an Eid Re'iyah, Rav Dessler's Mishpacha, Rav Reuven Dessler, Rav Dessler's father was the Talmud of the Alter of Kelm, and Rav Dessler was a Talmud of Kelm. And he writes that about... he was not an Eid Re'iyah, but he writes what his relatives told him about the Nazis killing the Talmidim of Kelm. And now even in the moments of the greatest Churban, there was calmness, there was serenity. They just said, we're going Al Kiddush Hashem, and we have to be sure not to get upset, we have to be sure not to scream, because that would make the Nazis think that we're not Ma'minim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they just went to their death with a tremendous menuchas hanefesh. Right? This was Rav Simcha Zissel. Interestingly enough, Rav Simcha Zissel's son, Rav Nachum Zev, was his malamakam. But in addition, there's a lot of talk about Rav Simcha Zissel's daughter, Nechama Lipa. Nechama Lipa is considered to be a chasheva force in the Muslim movement. That she was considered to be a makor of her father's sichas and the like. And Bachram used to go, again a little Monday, but Bachram used to go to talk to her about Inyanim of Musar and Yiras Shemayim. And her father said about Nechama Lipa, that she said, the Rebbe Nechama Lipa, that she was a person who truly changed her midas. I'm not sure, it's not clear what he was referring to. He says, but this is a rarity of someone who was so able to change their mitos totally from something negative to something positive. He considered her to be a mashal as to the shleimus that Musar could bring a person. This was the altar of Kelim, and from Kelim, just to give you a little bit of a shalshelis, a chain of Kelim, later on, Rav Yeruchim of Mir was a Talmud of the altar of Kelim. Rav Elio Lapian was a Talmud of the altar of Kelim. Rav Dessler grew up in Kelim, and Rav Dessler's father was a Talmud of the altar of Kelim, so Rav Dessler comes that way. So many of the great, great Bali Musar came from Kelim. Rav Yeruchim of Mir was a tremendous mashpia. Even Rav Chaska Levenstein was a Talmud. He was not a Talmud of the altar of Kelim. He was younger, but Talmud of a Talmud, etc. Right? This was the altar of Kelim. Now, the altar of Kelim had many, many ideas, a lot of which he got from Rav Yisrael. That is, he thought that a certain amount of Chachmas Chitzanias would be helpful in making a person able to be Ma'urav Ben Abrias. So he actually started a branch of Kelim in Grubin, which incorporated secular studies. Nobody seems to know about this. When Volozhin tried it, that was a big explosion. He did it on the side, which is the equivalent of actually having a high school, Yeshiva Katana with Limudei Chol, and that lasted for a few years, etc. So this is Rav Simcha Zissel, and as I say, he was considered to be the Talmud Muvik of Rishon Salanter, and the one that really was the most organized in carrying out his teachings. The second Talmud of Yisrael Salanter that I'm going to mention was Rav Yitzchak Blazer. Now, Rav Yitzchak Blazer is known as Rav Itzel Petterberger because he was the Rav of Petersburg, which is the capital of Russia. And Rav Yitzchak Blazer was a Meshunadik Talmud Chacham. In fact, we have a famous Sefer, Pre-Yitzchak, which is a book of Shailos Tshuvos in Halacha. But he was also a Meshunadik Anuf. He was the Rav of St. Petersburg, which was the largest city in Russia. It was the capital of Tsarist Russia. But whenever he was with Rabbanim, he never spoke in learning. He never spoke in learning. People talked in learning. And in fact, they tell Mice with the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi was once in St. Petersburg, and they were schmoozing in learning with different Rabbanim, and Rav Itzel Petterberger said nothing at all. And the Beis Halevi was very disappointed. He says, the Rav of Petersburg is an Amoritz. Like, he can't say it. Anyway, Beis Halevi asked the Gevaldik Akasha, and they were mefalpul back and forth, and finally the Beis Halevi gave two terutzim to the Kasha, and he asked Rav Itzel, what do you say to this? And Rav Itzel says, I'm not holding the sugi, I really don't know. So afterwards, the Beis Halevi was so nishtaiming that this great Rav of Petersburg doesn't know anything. He says, let me see this pre-Yitzchak, what type of sefer is it? So he sees the pre-Yitzchak. The pre-Yitzchak asked the Beis Halevi's Kasha and gave both terutzim of the Beis Halevi, whatever. He didn't want to go into Rabbanus Bichlal. He went into Rabbanus because Rav Yisrael Salanter said he had an achrayus to go into Rabbanus, but he retired shortly thereafter. He moved to Eretz Yisrael and he was nifter in Yerushalayim. Now, Rav Itzel Petterberger was not connected to a yeshiva per se. He did not start a yeshiva. When he was in Europe, he gave shmuzin in Slobodka, Musar shmuzin, till he went to St. Petersburg. But in writing, he's very, very important. You know, the sefer that gives us the teachings of Rav Yisrael Salanter is called Or Yisrael. And you've seen Or Yisrael. Now, if you look, Or Yisrael has many parts. One part are Rav Yisrael Salanter's letters to Talmidim. The other part is something called Sharei Or, which are biographies and maisim of Rav Yisrael. And the other is Kaichvei Or, which are Varklach and Musar and Yiras Hashem. All of those were written, except for the letters, Sharei Or and Kaichvei Or were written by Rav Itzel Petterberger. He is the Mechaber. And in terms of the dissemination of Torah Samotri, he's very important because he was the one that was Mefarsim, a lot of Yisrael's teachings in broader circles. He did not have a shita like the altar of Kelim. I mean, his shita was just pure Yiras Hashem, and he gave shmuzim during Elul Befrat, although the truth of the matter is, for much of Elul, he had a tainus dibur. He would only say shmuzim. He wouldn't talk otherwise. And when he married a second time, he was an alman. He was masna with his wife. He had to get a rishus. He says it was a tznai in the Kedushin that for the month of Elul till after Yom Kippur, he's only going to talk for bar mitzvah. etc. You know, she was maskim and the like. But he was a Meshunadik at Tzadik Ad Kedei Kach that when he was Nifter in Yerushalayim and he left at Tzava, that there could be no Hespedim for him. And normally you listen to such a Tzava, but Rav Kook, who was the chief Rev of Yerushalayim, at least among some circles at that time, said that he considered Rav Yitzel Petterberger to be a Rabban Shel Kol B'nei Agayla. And for Rabban Shel Kol B'nei Agayla, you give a hesped even connected. And this is how chashuv Rav Yitzel Petterberg was. A tzaddik, awesome tzaddik. But again, as I say, he was not the founder of a movement per se. In other words, he was a yachid b'mina yasid sitkus, but unlike Rav Simcha Zissel, he was not miyasid meistais in that sense. The second Talmud, who was very much like Rav Yitzel Petterberger, kind of a private citizen in the Musar movement, but a great, great gadol, was Rav Naftali Amsterdam. Again, his name. Now, this is not because he lived in Amsterdam. He didn't live in Amsterdam. His last name happened to be Amsterdam. And he was a baker by trade in Kovna. For a short time, he was a Rav in Helsinki, Finland, of all places. But basically, he was a baker by trade. But again, a tzaddik and Tyrus Amidas. And in Slobodka, Kovna, he was one of the Iker Mashpiyim. On guys. Guys would go to him just to look at him, just to learn with him. He would learn with Bachrim. He would, in fact, he would often have a Seder and could say Sachayshin with Bachrim, with Mitsuyanim. And they say that although he was 60 years older than the guys he was learning with, he would never allow any Ben Torah to get a Sefer for him. He said it's usher to be Meshamer. So we would say that Rav Naftali and Rav Yitzel Petterberger might be the private citizens of Yom Yisrael's movement. Rav Simcha Zissel was very much the builder of the movement. But two other Talmidim I'm going to mention are also people who built movements with different shitas. And that is, the second altar is the altar of Slobodka. Now, the altar of Slobodka was Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, the great-grandfather of the Mir Rosh Hashiva. And Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, interestingly enough, is mixed. He was a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter towards the end of Rav Yisrael Salanter's life, but the Iker, the altar of Slobodka, is mainly a Talmud of the altar of Kelim. At the altar of Slobodka, although he became independent and they had a big machlokas and they broke off, but the Iker, his hadracha and Musar, came from the altar of Kelim. Although, as I say, you'll see in a few moments that he did break off. He had big chilukei deis with the altar of Kelim. But he was so close to the altar of Kelim that even when he had founded this great yeshiva Slobodka, his contract allowed him for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to go to Kelim. So the altar of Slobodka did not spend Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in Slobodka. The altar of Slobodka went to Kelim. Now, Kelim was very interesting. In Slobodka, the altar had a lot of kavod. In Kelim, they didn't. Kelim, first of all, didn't believe in any kavod. Nobody was allowed to be called up by any title. The altar of Kelim was not called up by Harav or Moreno. He was called Simcha Zissel, Ben, whatever his father's name was. And the same thing with the altar of Slobodka as well. The altar of Slobodka, as I mentioned last week, is a very mysterious person. We don't know anything about the first 30 years of his life. Some say he was actually he was in Moscow, you know, who knows. But he started getting involved in speaking and chinuch. He got connected to Rav Yisrael Salanter, who saw in him keiches. He learned by Rav Simcha Zissel. He founded the yeshiva of Slobodka in the 1880s, shortly before Volozhin closed down. But the altar of Slobodka's shita became very different than the shita of Kelim. And it is said that the altar of Slobodka's whole shita of Musar was based on the very first shmuz he heard from Rav Simcha Zissel. So, in other words, he took out of a shmuz of Rav Simcha Zissel the yisayit of his whole shita, which wasn't necessarily Rav Simcha Zissel's yisayit. But what he took from Rav Simcha Zissel was miyasid his whole shita, and that is the idea of godless ha'adam. Godless ha'adam is that a mensch has to recognize his greatness, his kaichais, his potential. as opposed to seeing your chesronos, seeing your avlos, seeing all the negativity within you, which can drag you down. The altar believed in the shita of stressing the godless of a person. Because if a person knows that he's B'Tselem Elokim, if a person knows his godless and knows his greatness, he'll never want to do a chait. Because how could I take something ugly and destroy something so beautiful and pure and holy? And therefore, unlike Rav Yisrael, who emphasized a lot of Yiras HaEinish, and unlike the Altar of Kelim, who talked so much about Cheshbon and thinking things out, the Altar of Slobodka believed in emphasizing the godless Adam. Now, that had, like Volozhin a little bit, good things and bad things. Slobodka, maybe I'm prejudiced a little bit, because my Rosh Hashiv was very close to the Altar of Slobodka, Rav Ruderman of Der Yisrael. On one hand, Slobodka produced, in this after Volozhin, really more Gedolei Torah than any other yeshiva. Maybe I shouldn't make a statement on that, but certainly in terms of famous names, whether it's Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Yaakov Ruderman, Rav Shach was also a Talmud of Slobodka, and he was considered himself very close to the altar of Slobodka. Right? These are all the Talmidim of Slobodka. Slobodka also produced a great share of Apikorsen. Very, very talented people, very brilliant people. Harry Wolfson, but if you happen to know the name or not, but Harry Wolfson was an eminent. He was the first really Jewish professor at Harvard who got tenure in Jewish philosophy. And it's a mudnazach. Harry Wilson was not frum at all. You know, he ate on, you know, maybe he didn't eat on Yom Kippur, but he certainly was a Mechalel Shabbos. But he used to sit and learn philosophy. I mean, he was crazy. He was single. He never got married. He used to sit and learn philosophy 18 hours a day, like a base medrash. I mean, he was like a hermit. I mean, he sat, you know, he didn't eat. He Harvard. He did Chakiris. And he wrote in his introductions to his philosophy books, that he's taking the derech of Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who taught him how to learn a sugya of Gemara, and he's applying it to philosophical texts. He openly says, he calls it the hypothetico-deductive method of Talmudic analysis as applied to textual reasoning. So he went through a shtick of Spinoza, like, you know, you go through a Ketzais HaChayshin or a Nesivus. I mean, he took the whole structure of yeshiva world, and took it outside of religion and outside of Torah, and he applied it. So Slobodka had many iluyim like that, many brilliant iluyim like that. Another person who's a little controversial, there was a fellow Rabbi Shaul Lieber, Professor Shaul Lieberman. Now, this is a complicated situation. Shaul Lieberman, who just died, well, he died around 15 years ago, was the dean of the rabbinical school of the Jewish Theological Seminary, which is conservative. Right? So Shaul Lieberman, treif, conservative. Shaul Lieberman was one of the great Elohim of Slobodka. Now, in truth, in fairness, I have to say that Shaul Lieberman was a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs all of his life. Absolutely. There is absolutely no doubt that he was a Shomer Mitzvahs Mitchila V'Yad Seif. But he did affiliate organizationally with the conservative movement, and the relationship that Talmidei Chachamim had with him is a very, very ambiguous relationship. There are those that maintained a kesher with him, there are those that cut off a kesher with him, and there are those that maintained a kesher privately when nobody knew about it and they didn't do it publicly. It's a complicated issue. But as I say, you had Harry Wolfson, who was totally off the derech, but a brilliant person. Then you had Shaul Lieberman, and you can, I can give you a hundred others as well. But the Alter Shita is Godless Adam. Godless Adam emphasizes individuality. Individuality can create godless at extremities. The godless Hatayra, but it could also create a certain Wildkeit. Now, the Alter of Slobodka had many, many strange ways that we don't fully understand. He wasn't officially the mashgiach of the yeshiva. He wasn't anything officially in the yeshiva, but he was the kayach behind everything. And often if you were a person that he felt couldn't do better, he wouldn't bother you at all. You didn't come to davening, you didn't learn. In fact, people felt bad when they didn't get musr from him. In other words, people would come late to Seder and they'd go over to him and say, I came late to Seder today. They wanted to hear something from him. And he would say, fine, what do you want from me? In other words, the way he sometimes gave musr, the worst, most painful musr you got from the altar is when he didn't give you musr. Because that meant he was giving up on you. So people were hoping to have him yell at them or whatever it would be. My Rosh Hashiva tells me once that Rav Yeruchim of Mir, who was also a Talmud of both Rav Simcha Zisson and the altar of Slobodka, once came to the altar of Slobodka. And the altar of Slobodka screamed at him. He says, you're turning out cookie-cutter Talmidim. You want all your Talmidim to be like you. What type of mashgiach is it? You know, you give them musr, they all have to be like you. And he was yelling and screaming at Rav Yeruchim. And my Rosh Hashiva said, if I were to ever talk to a Talmud like that, I would lose my yeshiva in a day. But Rav Yeruchim was makabel. Rav Yeruchim was makabel the musr. They were very, very tough. I mean, they gave, you know. In other words, legabe, somebody who couldn't take it, the altar wouldn't say anything. But somebody who really was an Eved Hashem, they could sometimes say very harsh words. And they took it in. They took it in. And what was the maisa that the altar once went? Used to go to, Rav Yeruchim used to come to Slobodka, the altar would go to the Shmuzin, and he would cry, but then he would say, this was totally inappropriate to say, but whatever, it was like all these mixed things, that the most beautiful thing I ever heard, he shouldn't have said it, you know, different things. Like that. The altar was filled with contradictions. But the yisayit of the altar Shechinach was godless Adam. And Talmidim, like Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, like my Rosh Hashiva, they felt he was their father, Mamish. He made them Jewish. All right, so we have Kelim, we have Slobodka, and the third Shita is the most unusual of all, and this is the Shita of Nevardik. The altar of Nevardik, Rav Yosef Yisrael Horovitz, was also a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter towards the end, but Beikr from Kelim also, but they split off. The story about the altar of Nevardik was he was a yasim at a young age, and he had to stop learning in yeshiva to support his family. And he was very smart, very bright, and he was making a lot of money. Whatever that meant in Europe, I assure you, making a lot of money did not mean what it means here. But he was making a very good living for his mishpacha. He meets Rabbi Yisrael Salanter one day, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, "What are you doing with yourself?" So he said in Yiddish, "A yid has to make a living." So Rav Yisrael said back to him, and doesn't the yid have to think about making a dying? Meaning, you're worried about making a living. Why aren't you thinking about what's going to happen when you die? And that one line changed the altar of Nevardik permanently. That one line hit him. The story goes, and this is consistent with his personality, he left the wagon in the middle of the street with the merchandise. He just left. He didn't return home. He was a widow at the time, a widower at the time. So it wasn't, he had children to support, but the story goes that he sold his business, he changed everything. And for 2.5 years, this is an amazing thing, he became a hermit to work on Torah Midas. What do we mean by a hermit? In the city of Nevardik, he made an arrangement with somebody he would rent a room, and he wanted all the doors out of the room to be bricked up. In other words, he couldn't leave the room for 2 years. And food would be brought to him through a slit in the door. And there were two slits, one a milchik slit, one a fleishik slit. And he essentially locked himself up for 2.5 years. And he was called Rav Yisrael Baal HaChayrayim, Rav Yisrael of the two holes. Well, many people, Rav Yisrael did not approve of this. This was not done. He did this on his own. Many people thought this man was crazy. The Rav of Nevardik at the time was the Aruch HaShulchan, who is not a Musarnik per se, and people were demanding that the Aruch HaShulchan have this house broken into, and the person institutionalized or whatever it would be, like what type of Meshuggah guy, he bricks himself into a house. And the Aruch HaShulchan said, he's a tzaddik, we don't understand his drachim, let him do what he did. And for 2.5 years, he remains as a hermit. And then after 2.5 years, the house is opened up. He goes out to be a mashpia, and he starts, I guess he got a lot of energy in those 2.5 years. He starts 120 yeshivas throughout the breadth of Poland and Tsarist Russia. The Kayach of Novardik. And he was an extremist. He was an extremist in Emunah. He believed if a person has Emunah, even things that are totally impossible will be done. He says, a person should never ask himself, can this be done? You ask yourself, should it be done? If it should be done, you try to do it. You don't ever make, this is Navarre, you never make a cheshbon, is it shaykh? You only make a cheshbon, is it the right thing to do? So Nevardik was mashrish in its Talmidim, which you might call an extreme emuna, l'mayla miderech ha-teva. And in order to do this, one of the things he was mashrish in his Talmidim is never to be ashamed or embarrassed in front of people. So they say, at various times, he had his Talmidim, Bedafka, do things to embarrass themselves, so that they shouldn't be embarrassed. Like, you know, go into a makola, go into a grocery store, and ask to buy nails. They'll laugh at you and say, you're an idiot. What's the shot? Learn that even if they laugh at you, it's not so bad. Now, obviously, many of the Bali Musar didn't like Nevardik. They said, what do you mean? He says, that's a chilul Hashem. They're going to think, you know, your Talmidim are crazy. But he wanted to break the midah, because so many times we're afraid to do things because people will laugh at us. The first siman of Shulchan Aruch, right? Do not be embarrassed on Bnei Yagam the Ramalik. So his chinuch was, go and embarrass yourself and get used to it. And it's not going to bother you. I'll just end here with Kitzur, because I'm to say, one of the Talmidim of the altar of Nevardik was the Rashiva of the Nevardik Yeshiva in France, Rav Gershon Liebman. And Rav Gershon Liebman used to come to America to collect money, but he would never take any money with him. He came to America with no money in his pocket because he felt he wanted to have emunah. He didn't want to do the hishtadlus of having money in his pocket. So he comes to Kennedy Airport, and a Talmud sees him walking in the airport and says, can I help the Rosh Hashiva? She says, yes, yes, you can. I need to go to Manhattan. Can you give me a ride? He says, of course. So then they're driving. So the Talmud says to the Rosh Hashiva, I'm just curious, Rebbe, if I wouldn't have been in the airport, what would have happened? You don't have money for a cab. He says, what are you asking me? You were in the airport. He says, I mean, I'm maimin b'amuna shalema, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be matzi what I need. I don't need to have money in my pocket, whatever it will be. This is kind of the extreme. This was the emunah of Nevardik. Now we're going to see the Maisa, the Chazei Nish and the Emunah Bitachon does not mention Nevardik by name, but it actually is a big, big critique of this Shita. In fact, it was written B'davka Keneged, the Shita of Nevardik. But we'll talk some more about it. And the truth is, I'm going to go backwards, also go back to Rabbi Yisrael, because I was giving you the Shitas of the Talmidim, but I do want to go back next week as to Rabbi Yisrael's own Shita.
Was the Talmud of Mashkiach, that a part of the Muslim movement?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.